The Justin Robert Young Program is brought to you, as always, by patreon.com/JURY. It's where you can support the show. Thank you guys so much, man. This stuff has changed my life, and it is all because of you. I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you. Thanks, guys. Of course, you not only get this show, you also get my political show, Politics, Politics, Politics. It is all there, folks. Check it out. Patreon.com/JURY. But enough of talking about how we support the show. What do you say we just do the damn thing?
Ugly ain't the half, look at you. Well, you got blue teeth and you only got two teeth, but I kinda like to see you smile. And it appears that over the years you've turned into a big old steaming pile. And she said, yeah, I know I ain't no supermodel. I said, you ain't a hand model, baby, but that's fine. Most people's standards, but you're all right by mine.
Oh, bop, 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 bop. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Justin Robert Young program. My name is Justin Robert Young. Man, how's everybody doing? A spring has sprung, I think, officially, right? We are now into spring, 2017, barreling through. Feels like it's already, like, I can't even, it feels like it was Christmas 5 minutes ago, and now I'm already just old hip deep. In making plans for, like, conventions and stuff like that in the summer. Holy crap. Just so many amazing things happening. A few bits of housekeeping that we want to get through here up at the top. Number one, if you have the Discovery VR app, again, the Discovery VR app, what you want to do is make sure that you download the you don't have to download it. Just download the Discovery VR app on whatever mobile your platform you're on and watch the VR videos that Brian Brushwood and I did. They are all up there, all of our adventures from Florida at the New World Symphony in the water with manatees. You can swim with us and manatees. You can go through the Everglades with us and play High Lie, the world's fastest game. It's all there. Go ahead and check it out in the Discovery VR app. We had a blast shooting it, and we would love to support this platform and this project so we can continue to do more. Because, folks, I'm going to let you know, these gigs, the best gigs. I get to do fun stuff with Brian in a medium in which we are uniquely suited to do well, and I get paid. Nice. So I think that the product is enough for you guys to go watch it. Please go ahead and support it. Discovery VR. It's also on YouTube in 360-degree video. If you've got a VR system, like a Vive, you can download the full source files on them. They are massive, man. They're like 4 gigs apiece per episode. But you are literally there. It is like ultra high definition video, and you are like right with us. So go ahead and try that out. That is the Discovery VR app. Enough of me tooting my own horn. Let's get into the business of the day, which includes me tooting my own horn. I was surprised today because I how do I put this? I made a Reddit thread. You know, it's a very interesting situation when periodically stuff that I'll do will pop up randomly on Reddit, or somebody will mention me randomly on Reddit. Usually a fan of shows like this, like Jury and Night Attack and TMS. But every once in a while, there is a moment when you're not sure whether or not you should be thrilled. But I will say that this was one of those moments. If you go right now to reddit.com/r/piece-of-shit-book-club, reddit.com/r/piece-of-shit-book-club, you will find the number one upvoted story right now, post right now, is my book, Secretly Gay President Thwarts Zombie Invasion with the Help of a Wizard and His Barely Legal Smoking Hot Daughter Whose Titty Falls Out at One Point. Now, this was just brought to my attention. Apparently, for some people, it showed up on, you know, when you go 19 pages deep in reddit.com/r/all, right? That is every board. What is the most excited? You know, there is, you know, some juice on this, apparently. I don't know exactly how much, but apparently there is some juice here. And it's not like anybody is particularly mean. You know, it's just somebody listed it as a part of the piece of shit book club. Which is funny because, like, you know, I would feel bad if, like, Go Home Santa, You're Drunk, or one of the books that I actually spent some time on was on here. But I kind of feel like Secretly Gay President Thwart Zombie Invasion with the Help of a Wizard and His Barely Legal Smoking Hot Daughter Whose Titty Falls Out at One Point. Like, I kind of feel like this is where that book belongs. Like, this book has finally found its people that now that it is ensconced in the history of the Piece of Shit Book Club. But it's funny. So I jumped in here and I just said, like, yes, I wrote this. I could look up what it sold, because somebody right here wrote, I'd love to see the sales number on this. But a guy responded to that and said, you know, it's always funny when people come across their own books in this sub and seem excited. I'm sure finishing something and releasing it is more of an achievement than being on here, but congrats anyway. To which I responded, I mean, listen, my book's called Secretly Gay President Thwarts Zombie Invasion with the Help of a Wizard and His Barely Legal Smoking Hot Daughter Whose Titty Falls Out at One Point. I mean, if you're taking yourself seriously, having written a book with that title, man, you got larger problems than anything that Reddit could solve, right? Like, you are officially in some kind of glass case of delusion if you're like, oh my God, can you believe these pencil neck dorks think that my book, Secretly Gay President Thwarts Zombie Invasion with the Help of a Wizard and His Barely Legal Smoking Hot Daughter Whose Titty Falls Out at One Point is being slandered? I guess technically it'd be libel because it's written and not said. But I don't know. What do you guys think I should do? Should, I mean, because people are asking for like an AMA. I mean, I feel like I'm just playing the good sport here. But also, I'm kind of like, well, you want to know what? Like, is there a professional wrestling element of this? You know, is there like, should I start a fight with the Piece of Shit Book Club? Or should the Piece of Shit Book Club become my new best friends? I don't know. Maybe one day I should write a book that doesn't start fights. You know, that would be another thing that I should think about doing. Because right now, the two books that have gotten the most attention are this and The Diamond Club, which for those of you who are not aware, The Diamond Club was a crowdsourced erotic fiction novel that we put out in the wake of 50 Shades of Grey, massive success, which I wrote the first chapter for. And that was tremendously successful. But also got us into, like, hot water and, like, a fight with people who were very seriously fans of erotic fiction. They found us to be mocking their favorite art form. Which, I mean, yeah, we kind of were mocking it as an easily parodyable genre. But we also, like, I guess we were looking, everybody who wrote those chapters were probably looking more to make people laugh than to titillate. And so we probably violated a social compact amongst erotic fiction writers that, like, first we bring engorged sex glands, then comedy if we have time. We were like, comedy first, but if you jerk off to it, that's fine. That's cool. That's a cool thing to do. Although my chapter at the beginning of The Diamond Club was very erotic. I feel like that wasn't necessarily, it was a bit over the top. Like, it was silly. It was breathless in its writing, but it wasn't necessarily, you know, wasn't terrible. It wasn't like overly comedic. It was like some real sex. So I don't know. If you want to buy it, you can buy it. I'm going to go ahead and show you guys my, these are my, my actual sales numbers, right now. Cause I'm going to let you guys know my sales have exploded. My sales have absolutely gone through the roof. Let me show you guys right here. Okay. Here we are. Look at this. Look at this. Right now. Right now. I sold literally no copies. This goes back for the last 30 days. Today, 5 units. 5 units. I'll tell you what. I'm giving this chart a boner. All this piece of shit book club press. You want to know what? You want to go last 90 days? Let's go the last 90 days. Let's go for the last 90 days for Just Secretly Gay President. Yep, look at that. Literally no sales until today. 5. How about this? How about we go all the way back to when it was written? All the way back. Oh, no, wait, I can't. I can't do that. Anyway, so go ahead and check it out. Right now, it is exploding. Thank you, guys. Thank you to the Piece of Shit Book Club. Hopefully, we can continue to make terrible books for which upsets people in some way. Let's move on to some of the real stories here. I hate umbrellas. I don't know what it is, man. I don't like them. I don't like umbrellas. Why don't I like umbrellas? Well, number one, like, part of it is that when you grow up in South Florida, it doesn't rain for all that long. And you're pretty much used to running from one air-conditioned place to another. So you can usually just go from wherever you need to go to your car, from your car to wherever you need to go. With a nice little sprint, you don't necessarily need an umbrella. And it's not going to rain all day, so you don't need to grab one with you. Because for the minimum benefit that you get from an umbrella, shielding you from falling water, all you do is create a day-long burden of this oppressive water wand that has to go with you for the rest of the day. Oh, thank God I had this umbrella when I came out of the subway. Now I'm able to just douse anybody with a little Expecto Patronum. Somebody pisses me off, shortchanges me at the coffee shop. Ba-ba! you're on Splash Mountain now. And then I control this power by way of this water wand that I've been carrying. You know, I don't know. I think really everything that I hate about rain, I learned in New York City. When I lived in New York City, the East Coast just has terrible rain. I just don't like it. It's just an awful, like, just rains constantly. Rained again today. I'm also pissed off. In general, I don't like rain. I'm not a fan. I just think that it's an unnecessary part of life. I mean, we can't find water elsewhere. Maybe you can rain somewhere else, somewhere I don't live. It was nice. I thought we'd cleared up with the rain here in California. Now all of a sudden it's raining again. Not a fan. Not a fan. I think it goes back to I have two massive weather-related pet peeves. Two massive ones. One, anything that gives me wet socks. I mean, come on. Come on, people. Come on. Wet socks. Wet socks are literally worse than waterboarding. Put that one on a t-shirt. Wet socks are the road to hell. This is when I got into everybody's booty hole about snow last week. This is what I'm talking about. If you're living with this, if you are living with this kind of brutality in your life, you are doing nothing but torturing yourself. You are giving yourself the worst life you could give yourself with wet socks. And don't come at me like, oh, whatever, wet socks, bring another pair. So what? Where are you going to put those wet socks? Huh? You going to put them in your bag? You going to put them in your purse? You going to bring a little Ziploc bag so you can put them in? And when you open them up, all manner of foulness, just some tendrils of awful smells come sneaking into your nose, up into your brain, corrupting the very fruit of knowledge and consciousness? Is that what you want? Oh, just throw the socks away then. Oh, I'm sorry. The Sultan of Dubai. I didn't know I was talking to His Eminence. I ain't got the money to throw socks away every time it rains. You know what I used to do? Flip-flops. Yeah, flip-flops. Every goddamn day, that's what I did when I was living in Florida. It could rain all the time. Just going to wash my feet, make these flip-flops more gross. Man, did those flip-flops get gross. Oh, they were just disgusting. In fact, now that I think about it, they probably smelled worse than wet socks. Moving on. Here's the other thing I hate. Freezing rain. In fact, I hate freezing rain more than I hate snow. Snow's a menace. Freezing rain is an unconscionable action that proves that Mother Nature is not some benevolent Gaia looking out for all of us, trying to keep us in a symbiotic ecosystem so we might be fruitful and multiply. Nay, freezing rain is absolute and definitive proof that not only does Mother Nature hate us and want us dead, she wants to torture us on the way there. Mother Nature is a sadistic bitch, and freezing rain proves it. God, I hate freezing rain. It's like, hey, it's raining, and also it's sticking to your face. It's basically dunking on you and hanging on the rim, dangling its nuts in your face. That's what freezing rain is. It's the touchdown dance after they score. It's the sports analogy that nobody listening to this gets. That's what freezing rain is. God, I hate it. And then imagine if you have to bring an umbrella through that. Oh, God, you have an umbrella, rain's freezing on it, and not only is your umbrella wet because you brought it through the rain, it's got a little water for later. Oh, a little frozen water, just for a little snack a little later. Oh, yeah, you know, shake off the umbrella a little bit. Meanwhile, that frozen rain's like, yeah, dog, cool story. I'm just going to sit here and melt into another gigantic coat of rain. And now the rain's done, right? But you still got this soaking water wand with you. wetting up your legs. You know, you put it next to your bag. Now all of a sudden your bag's soaking. God forbid you put it close to your bag and your bag's open. Now all of a sudden all the papers you had inside are soaked. Ah! I hate it. But what else are you going to do? I mean, the umbrellas, this is a terrible solution. They blow up. Oh, God. Great. That's another proof that Mother Nature hates us. Umbrellas that blow upwards. And now all of a sudden, you're not blocking the water. You're collecting it in a fine martini glass. Yes, you are now the unwitting Gaston for Mother Nature as it fills a cup of white wine with its tears. That's what an umbrella does for you. I don't know what we'd do elsewise, though. I mean, because I'm not going to be a poncho man. I don't know about that. I don't know if I could ever be a poncho guy. That would be a bad look, I think. And also, a poncho is just a gigantic umbrella. I don't know. Maybe some sort of like self-heating. I don't know. Somebody give me ideas. I don't have any ideas. I mean, again, I'm just pointing out a problem. I'm not trying to solve it. People are saying raincoat. I mean, but do they? I guess you would want a raincoat kind of like made of bathing suit material. For whatever reason, bathing suit material dries in like 5 minutes. I think that would be good. Personal inflatable hamster bubbles. That'd be good. Oil skin, Iron Man armor, just a shell around me all the time. Yeah. See, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. I would like to start an X Prize for weather pussies. Started by me, Chief Weather Pussy, Justin R. Young. Hi, I'm Justin R. Young, and I've been a weather pussy for as long as I can live. I can live? I've been alive. Take two. Hi, I'm Justin R. Young, and I'm a weather pussy. Hell, I think I've been a weather pussy for as long as I've been alive. But thanks to your generous donations. Oh, by the way, this is a charity, so I'm starting a charity now. Please donate so we can create more weather pussy technology. Thanks to your donations, we've created a $1 million prize. You're going to need to give $1 million, everybody. I'm just letting you know. We are going to have a $1 million prize to create the best weather pussy technology we have ever had. Are you afraid of rain? Do you think that temperatures that go outside of a very rigidly defined 68 to 85 degree range are abhorrent? Do you believe that snow should be federally abolished? Well, you are in the right place. Thanks to your donations, we will make all of these things more bearable. I feel like we've done something, you guys. Feel like we've done something. I feel like this is gonna be big. Please go ahead and make your donations to patreon.com/JURY. Oh. I don't know if we've talked about this before. Maybe we've talked about this before, maybe we haven't. All right, yes or no here in the chat. Do you more than once a day believe that you're bothering somebody? Like by talking to them, by interacting with them. And I mean in all facets of life, in your friendships, in your romantic relationships, in your business relationships, do you feel like you're bothering people? That your presence is a net negative at times. Because I'm curious. Yeah, fairly often we're getting by existing. No, says Ninja Steve. No, says Bad Weave. F underscore F says he never leaves his room. bad weave in a tremendous exercise of self-confidence, as my presence is always enlightening for all who are fortunate enough to experience it. That is good. You should write that. Man, put that on a bumper sticker. I like that one. Everybody should be forced to repeat that every morning. Because for whatever reason, that is always, for me, the canary in the coal mine when I know I'm getting into a depressive state. Is when I feel like, oh, I don't want to send that email, I'm bothering them. Oh, I don't want to tweet that, I'm bothering them. Oh, I don't want to talk to this person, I'm bothering them. Oh, I don't want to invite this person out to this thing, I'd probably be bothering them. I don't want to communicate with my business partners because they're probably busy. You know? I've always find that whenever that gets acute, I tend to be on the road to depression. And I was trying to think that through this weekend, because at the root of it, it's got to be either a hyperinflation of what I believe the other person is up to, and the underinflation of what I believe my self-worth is. Now, this kind of came into sort of a crystalline clarity after I saw the movie Get Out on Sunday night. Because without getting into spoilers to that movie, what I took away as the theme was that the worst thing that we can do to each other, and of course this is through the lens of race, is dehumanize one another. And in that movie, obviously, it draws it into a very dramatic example for the purpose of the plot. But I wound up thinking, well, you know, this is kind of what I'm doing. I'm dehumanizing myself. And I'm putting a larger onus onto those around me. I believe that my interaction is going to be a negative to people. Now, I think obviously we have to be well aware of how much we're interacting with our friends and family and how much burden we're putting on them. And this is not to say that you need to turn off all your guidance systems. But, of course, life lives in the margins. And if the only thing that you think every day is, you know, that I'm not here to better those around me, then it really is just the ultimate sign of self-flagellation. Musical Chemist in the Twitch chat says, thing is, there are studies, research on how women constantly apologize because they feel that they are an inconvenience and always feel like they're bothering people. This is immediately echoed by two other women in the chat room. Musical Chemist says, I try hard not to constantly say I'm sorry, but I do it all the time and I hate it. There was I forget where I saw it. There's a great thing that made the point that you should make the conscious effort, instead of saying I'm sorry, to say thank you. Because many times when you are saying I'm sorry, what you really mean is I'm sorry for making you do this thing for me, right? When really the better way to express that would be thank you for doing it. Because that all that expresses gratitude, that expresses humility. It just makes the other person the center of attention as opposed to you, which is its own funny thing, right? Because I'm sure everybody here in the chat room that says that they apologize constantly, the last thing that they want to do is draw attention to themselves. In fact, they would like to move on from the subject. I'm sorry, let's move on. But in so many ways, I'm sorry is an invitation to have more of a conversation about something. When really, you could accomplish so much more and achieve your desired effect if you just said, hey, thank you for doing that. I'm an idiot. Instead of, I'm sorry for doing that. I'm an idiot. That's hard, you know. Those are some fancy talking, but like, you know, at the end of the day, if you don't have the self-confidence, then, you know, what are words? Nothing. I mean, your actions are what matter. Yeah. I don't really know where I'm going with this. I'm just glad I didn't get myself in trouble by talking about the N-word again. Speaking of people who got mad at me for talking about the N-word, let's go ahead and get into your emails. You can, of course, email this show, Justin Robert Young, at gmail.com. Before we begin, let's go ahead and talk about people who are upset with me about what I talked about when it came to hating snow and how snow is the white menace. Dave writes, a story about somebody who escaped the snow. Back in 1961, my dad graduated high school in Pittsburgh and spent a while in Southern California. Then later in his 70s, he looked into moving us out there. Only 1 year after the divorce in 1980, he left for Orange County to drive a bus for Orange County Transit. He couldn't stand the buses without power steering and brakes, the narrow, hilly, and snowy streets of Pittsburgh. He had been back only once since 1980 during the snowy season, and that was for my wedding in 2003. By the way, the day after our wedding, it snowed 8 inches. This is obviously a man who has PTSD from driving a public bus in Pittsburgh in the 70s. Living in the snow must be made a DSM mental illness. Dave, you're right. You're right. Palinuk writes, regarding your tirade about snow, I'm going to have to ask you to calm your tits. I'm going to have to ask you to please do better for yourself and for your family. Move away from the snow. Connor from Toronto writes, why is everybody I listen to on podcast friends with Greg Grunberg? He seems to be a friend of the show on every podcast. Yeah, he's just a really nice guy. Like, Greg Grunberg's a guy who listens to a lot of podcasts, and who doesn't want to hear from Greg Grunberg? You know, he's been a part of a lot of shows. He's friends with J.J. Abrams. He's in Star Trek. He's in Star Wars. He's just a cool guy to know. He's a cool guy to have on your Rolodex. What do you guys want to do? I'll take the first line here. Do you guys want to end with financial advice, or do you want to end with people yelling at me for talking about the N-word last week? Which way do we want to go? Do we want to end with financial tips or people upset with me for talking about the N-word? Let's go ahead. I'm going to take the first person to type. We're going to end with N-word anger. All right. So now we're going to do the debt topics. Sean, we're going to do a new mailbag segment I like to call Sean is Poor. Sean wrote in to us a couple weeks ago. Said he had $150,000 in trade school debt and was like basically saying he's going to be in debt forever. He's working a minimum wage job that barely covers the interest. He is kind of financially ruined, and he doesn't even want to go into the trade that he made such a financial commitment to. So we got a lot of emails on this, a lot of very good emails on this. So I'm going to do a little Suze Orman financial talk here. Here we go. Ben writes, the debt discussion may be a real concern for a lot of your listeners in high school looking for at furthering the education. Higher education can set you up for success if done correctly. I studied electrical engineering at a state school, at the time one-fourth the price of a private school, minored in business, and took a seminar off to do a co-op to earn some money and some industry experience. I left school with very little debt, around less than $5,000, and I was able to start working and saving for a down payment on a house. I'm now working full-time as an engineer and earning my MBA at nights. I had friends from various majors that did not have such a positive story, and I think that college is what you make of it. Many friends choose a major because it was known to be the easiest on campus and are barely better off than a high school diploma years after graduation. If you skate by and are in a major that doesn't have a great career opportunities or don't align with what you actually want to do, you should invest in yourself somewhere else. Man, this is, again, where I get in trouble when I talk about how college is a sham. And I don't necessarily mean that all college is a sham, but college as we know it is kind of a hustle. Because all anybody talks about is you got to go to college, you got to go to college, and nobody in your family go to college, be the first to go to college. But your dad went to college, you should go to college. And college is great if you're this guy who knew what he was doing. It was good for me because I knew what I was doing. You know, when it didn't look like college was for me, I was about to drop out, go to a cheaper college. Then I found an element that was good. I got a major in that and then immediately didn't do my major. But I've turned out all right, so it's fine. I left school with $33,000 in debt, which is, apparently by today's standards, great. You know, for me, I thought I was never going to make that money back. But if you are not actively there in college to do something, then you should just go to a community school. Like, I feel like we just need, or make it cheap, you know, just do something. I don't know. Me and Brian have kind of fantasized about having this, like, you know, college is for some people, but for a lot of people who just kind of want to go to college because that's where the momentum of society is taking them, you should think about not doing that and do this instead. And the idea was to, like, make up our own real-life curriculum of, like, things that you can do that are free, like life goals, set a certain amount of work hours that you should do, you know, get in shape. Like, do, like, a bunch of things that also set you up for a better, more fruitful life, but at least don't put you on this gigantic money clock that is counting no matter what. Chris writes, I just listened to the most recent jury, and you called for some financial advice. I'm an accountant for one of the biggest heavy machine manufacturers in the world. My day-to-day work focuses on bank relationship management, cash flow forecasting, capital management. Additionally, I have degrees in financial accounting, finance, economics, graduated with honors, and scored in the 99th percentile on the nationwide ETS business competency exam. Having established my credibility, here is my advice for Sean regarding his high-interest loan. This is what this show does, ladies and gentlemen. Come on. What other show is bringing you this kind of experience? I was just ranting about wet socks 5 minutes ago, and now I am bringing you a world-class financial expert to help you, Sean. To help you.
I'm here for you, Sean.
Or rather, who is it? Chris. Chris is here for you. Here we go. Your initial assumption on transferring the balance of your loan is correct. Refinance, refi, and refi. These high-interest tech schools and alternative student loans can be a death trap depending on your career prospects. Sean should go to a bank with whom he has a good relationship and ask to refinance the loan in question. They may ask for collateral, and if he has any, then put it up. If his relationship with said bank is exceptional, he may not even need collateral. Alternatively, a cosigner with a rockin' credit score will help immensely. If they won't refi, then go to a credit union, open an account, deposit a few hundred bucks, and ask for a personal loan, and hopefully his credit score is good enough for a low interest rate. If that isn't an option, then maybe he has a parent or a trusted family member who has some home equity that they'd be willing to tap into. With a home equity loan, he adds parenthetically, I would avoid taking out a second mortgage, but if they love him enough, then why not? Then he can make payments on that loan instead. Alternatively, he could try some credit management agencies who would take over his loans and refinance them for a better monthly rate. Finally, if none of those are viable, Sean could go into gay porn. Because as we all know, gay porn pays better. I added that editorially. But thank you so much, Chris, for writing in. And almost as if his ears were burning, Sean himself wrote in. Sean writes into our new segment, Sean's So Poor. Sean, so last week, John asked if maybe I just don't have a passion for cooking and that's why I don't work in the industry anymore. But nothing could be further from the truth. My issues come from the fact that as a person, I have a horrible time dealing with stress and tend to have meltdowns when I get overwhelmed. Back when I was working as a line cook, I would puke before my shifts, and I was diagnosed with an ulcer at the age of 21. This led to a hard time holding any one cooking job for longer than a year, which led to a horrible job industry, which made it harder and harder to get hired. And to be honest, the stress was killing me. So I realized I couldn't handle the stress of the line and decided to get out. Plus, on top, I was only getting paid minimum wage everywhere I went to and in an oversaturated market during the 08 financial crisis. But in terms of my passion, I've never stopped cooking, even while making disc golfs on the day-to-day. That's his job. He makes disc golfs. Disc golf discs. Sorry. The old DGD. I tried making a YouTube channel and streaming enterprise about teaching cooking, but I found that without money for better equipment and a place to film, I rent a room so I can't film in my own kitchen space. I can't make it work yet. While I would love to work at John's Bakery, I unfortunately live in Southern California, which may be why we don't get paid as much down here, since there's a huge surplus of cooking and baking talent. Tough to ask for $15 an hour when somebody else will do it for $11. All right, Sean. Also, what he's referring to is that one of our other listeners, John, who owns a bakery shop in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, was saying that he can't find somebody with Sean's qualifications. And he is paying a good wage with Benny's. Sean, it's time for a little tough love, all right? Now, you, of course, you're always welcome to write in here. This is an inclusive community for which you'd have to do a lot to get kicked out of. But I'm going to ask you for something here, all right? I want you to go ahead and take a look at your student loans and take some of Chris's advice. Just walk to a bank. Make a point to set up a thing. Go to a bank. See if they'll refinance your loans. Because right now, what I'm reading, man, I had to pick up your email with a pair of tongs. There was so much self-loathing on it. You got to shake that off a little. I know you're down. I know that life's kicked you in the nuts. But guess what? You ain't going to make it better unless you take positive steps. And right now, this financial burden is hanging around your neck like a yoke on an ox. You're carrying that burden. Now, you still got to pay it down, but you don't have to feel like a helpless pile of poop about it, all right? So I would say that. And as far as, you know, just you know, hanging your head that you live in Southern California and there's so many people and yada, 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 guess what? There's also more jobs. And also, I'm going to say something I don't think I'd ever said in my life. I'll tell you what, John's really looking for a cook. You know, maybe move to Iowa. I mean, you're a young guy. Got a whole lot of time ahead of you. If you could make good money and it meant leaving Southern California, man, I would think about it. Don't get trapped. Don't let your life become your prison, man. Anyway, also disregard everything I'm going to say because I'm going to read people yelling at me about the N-word. For those of you who didn't listen to last week, I had a half-baked idea that in hindsight, I really wish I would have put a little bit more thought into, that effectively boiled down to letting an idea that black people could license saying the N-word to white people. because white people love to say it anyway. And, you know, it could be like, it could be the way that we could make reparations happen. Now, if you want to criticize the idea, get in line. Plenty of people did. But that was the idea. Jamie writes, after listening to the last jury and the whole debate about the N-word, here's my question. If the N-word is set to black people, what about words like, and then he uses phrases that are offensive to Japanese and Chinese people that rhyme with map and sink. Are we going to have a list of words that we'd have to pay up on? I mean, in the context of the idea, maybe. I didn't get that far. I didn't get that far. It was a half-baked idea. Brian writes, I just want to have to refer to it as the N-word. Do you call fuck the F-word anymore? No, it's overly politically correct bullshit. We all know what the word is. It's just that everyone has to be a fucking pussy about it. I sure wouldn't pay for the privilege. It almost never winds up being an issue in my life. It's just the principle of the thing. Well, you know, I mean, number one, it was an idea, right? If you never say the N-word, then you would never be put in a position that you would want to license it. You know, I don't know. I don't necessarily view a lot of this language stuff as, like, politically correct. You know, I think it's just we understand that we don't talk, you know, the way that we do to our friends, to our grandma, right? It's about effective communication 9 times out of 10, and sometimes that involves having different phrases and words that you use or don't use. So I don't know. I don't know if I buy the whole language thing. Ken writes about the N-word Patreon. Personally, I might sign up. Not so much for the N-word license, more hoping it might alleviate some of this white guilt. Back when I was a kid, I adopted calling people N-word nuts. I don't know what the N-word meant at the time. I'm Canadian, if that makes anything more plausible. I heard an older kid say it, and I assumed it must be cool. I stopped saying it after I horrified a friend's mom. I had an idea for a racial confessional. It's a lot like your standard Catholic confessional, except that the priest in this scenario is a representative of the race you want to be absolved yourself from being racist towards. You confess all your sins and then sum up just how racist you were to make suggestions, action to alleviate your guilt. I thought about bringing it up on my own podcast, but I'm not sure I'm brave or funny enough. Maybe I should get out of this game before I PewDiePie myself. Is that something that worries you? Sometimes I feel like I'm one drunk tweet away from being ousted by society. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're feeling. I definitely felt like, yeah, you want to know why that one didn't feel good coming out. Definitely, like, watched, you know, some of the Patreon pledges get adjusted. And I'm like, well, is this random? Or should I think more about when I randomly inject race into all of my conversations? The world may never know. And finally, on the subject of Colin Moriarty. Colin Moriarty, of course, is from Kind of Funny Games. He resigned from that, which is a very popular video game content production factory that has not one but two of the most successful Patreons of all time. He told a joke on International Women's Day using the hashtag A Day Without Women. He tweeted, ah, peace and quiet. This got raised a bunch of hackles. And he resigned from his company. Scale comments on this by saying, on the Moriarty thing. Well, you know, I think he's a grossly misunderstood guy. I think even after all the shenanigans he and his detractors have gone through, in the end, he just wanted Holmes to look at him as an equal. Holmes, who was, if you think about it, just a guy, already had the spotlight, while Moriarty, a professor, worked from the shadows. That's just got to eat away at a guy, doesn't it? The stories are always from the perspective of Holmes and Watson, who saw Moriarty as their biggest challenge. Not really as an equal. That's all, a challenge, a puzzle. Not an equal. It was a game to Holmes. But I really think that he needed to look at it from Moriarty's perspective. He was desperate. He just wanted validation. Poor guy. He's a tragic character, really. Now, on the Colin Moriarty thing. And now for those of you who listen to the Politics, Politics, Politics show, this is going to be in the voice of my angry email of the week. This guy told a joke. Guy got fired. Fuck these snowflake, libtard, social justice wankers. I'm not even fucking surprised by this shit anymore. But what really grinds my gears is other comedians, not you, jury, chill, being first in line to soapbox about how, quote, this sort of thing just isn't acceptable in the current year, and certainly not about a special day. God damn it, virtue signaling pieces of garbage. For fuck's sake, you spineless motherfuckers. Can you successful comedians really claim that they've never said something that could be used against them or taken out of context and then could be used against them? Where is the fucking solidarity? Comedians, backstabbing sons of bitches. To every fucking comedian out there who took a stab at Moriarty, count your fucking blessings, you hypothetical fuck stains. All it would take is one fucking comment from you on a slow news day, and these fucking lefty libtard legion of fucking joke police pieces of shit will target your next fucking hypocritical backstabbing virtue signaling cunts. Not you, jury, chill. Every fucking one of you cunts. Not you, jury. You're all cunts. Cunts. Not you, jury. Seriously, you're pretty chill and pretty crafty to keep a neutral tone, which is refreshing in both culture and politics being so politicized these days. Fucking spineless cunts. Well, Scale, thank you for writing in. You know, I see where you're coming from. Yes, and. Yes, and. You know, comedy is communication, in my opinion. Good comedy is communication. And I don't mean good comedy as in quality comedy. I mean comedy that works. It's the reason why if you just whisper an inside joke next to somebody, it's not as funny as if you tell a joke in which they are involved and can be given the agency to laugh. So much of comedy is making sure that your audience understands what you're doing and then executing upon that premise. So, if you tell a joke for which your intended audience does not understand it, or takes the wrong message from it, or gets offended by it, the onus is on you as a comedian. There will be a day, mark my words, when I say something that will cost me money, cost me a job, cost me patrons. In fact, that day might have already come. And it's probably happened a bunch of times before. I just have a very diffuse way of making money that it doesn't seem that big to me. But understand this, if I ever got on a larger platform, count the days until I say something that costs me money, if not cost me the job. Like, that's just going to happen. And it'll be my fault. Because comedy is about communication. So while I can understand that you believe that there is this posse of thought police, and I think there is an argument to be made that we are more reactive to this kind of stuff than we were in a pre-Twitter era, pre-social media era, I don't necessarily think that this is the end-all be-all. And also, let's go ahead and Colin Moriarty launched his new Patreon where he is going to do history lessons. By the way, he did video games before. Yesterday, he launched a Patreon about history lessons. Let's go ahead and take a look at what that's done. Collins Last Stand, patreon.com/Collins Last Stand, $34,000 a month. And he has to split that one way. All those other kind of funny Patreons, staff, co-hosts, overhead. He's doing a YouTube series that he'll probably shoot out of his apartment that he's going to write and produce. So maybe he can cut somebody else a little cheese to edit it together. $34,000, damn near $35,000 a month. So let's not cry for Colin Moriarty, who, by the way, point of order, he did leave. He did not get fired. I mean, certainly that whole brouhaha probably precipitated him leaving. But for something outside of what people love him for, $35,000 a month. I think homeboy's doing all right. I think he's going to be all right. All right. That about brings us to the end of this episode of the show. Folks, if you would like to email us, it is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. I want to thank everybody for listening. Go ahead and follow me up. Twitter and Instagram @JustinRYoung. Snapchat, JustinRYoung2. Oh, you know, I should put this at the beginning. But go ahead and get stickers or DIAF.com. Again, stickers or DIAF.com. New stickers available. Go ahead, stickers or DIAF.com. Meme pictures. Pictures of Harambe. Pictures of that boy. Pictures of the guy that does rap lyrics with the... It's great, man. Go ahead and check it out. Stickers or DIAF.com. $5 gets you the new ones alone. The Mega Pack is $19.99, gets you all 5 new stickers, 7 classic stickers, a Ruin 'Em wine label, and a jury will buy you a drink token. They are shipping now. So if you want them, then go ahead and get them. Hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. That about wraps it up for this edition of the program. Remember, until next week, my name is Justin Robert Young.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.